This is a production of Cornell University.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's student assembly meeting. The time is now 4:48, calling this meeting to order. Chelsea, if you could please call the roll, that'd be great. Thank you. Oh, sorry. I always do that. Right when you're about to, like, take a bite. You hate me.
Tell me.
Tell me.
Good afternoon.
He's here.
Thank you. So now we're going to move on to approval of the minutes. Are there any motions? So the minutes were actually not sent out in the email, which shows that no one... Oh, it went to the whole essay. Oh, you sent it to the whole essay. I did look at the minutes. I thought that only went to me and John. So, okay, guys, you really want to start. Okay, there's a motion to approve the minutes. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none, the minutes are approved. We're now going to move on to open microphones, so if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak who aren't already on the agenda, feel free to raise your hands now. Also, there are now comment cards on every seat, so if you have any ideas, if you have any feedback, or just anything you want to relay, feel free to fill those out, and then we'll collect them later. Okay. Next is announcements and reports. The first is Know the Power of Your Words announcement. LGBTQ represent liaison Iwaoka and VP of Outreach Gillen. Next is a Cornell Diamond plastic bag announcement. Great. Thank you. Next is a Big Red Ideas announcement, Representative Chopra. And we'll come back. Oh, hey. Here, send it down. Representative Tavon. Next is a Qgis Watchers update. President of Qgis Watchers, Eric Schoenberg. Thank you very much. I'm going to open up the speakers list if there are any questions. Rep. Iwoga.
How do you figure out what the benefit
of the state and how do you get it to that? Right. So generally, organizations will contact us. Ideally, our communication and help them lead them into that record platform. But right now, we're all doing is working with to reach out to them and make sure that they're aware of the contact.
Any other questions? Rep. Lovely.
I personally went through the training and took the test. I haven't received any notification of membership or anything like that.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to make a decision, but can you speak to that?
Yeah, so we'll be contacting our general on this weekend. The reason for the delay is working through some logistical issues, but all of our members, especially those who take any questions, we have information for the test that they have. We have to provide this week. So it's just a delay or a holiday.
Great, thank you very much. All right. Ronil isn't here, so he won't make an appropriations committee announcement. I'm making a quick agenda announcement. I was a little late with my agenda submission. I apologize. It's reminiscent of the old days when I was putting together the agenda. There's a resolution. I talked actually to a lot of people about this resolution, but it's Resolution 45. It's called United Student Body. It's very much a draft right now, so you'll see that it looks like a draft at times. But we're just going to look over today for questions and suggestions. So just take a look at that and see what it's about. Next, we're moving on to Business of the Day, Resolution 43. Student Assembly Finance Commission Performance Tier Proposal. Feel free to have like 2 minutes to reintroduce it.
First, I'd like to make a motion to amend. Basically, I just think that the ninth question about diversity and inclusion and our efforts, but that the mining probably can be better. So we reached out to describe how your organization currently reaches out to Cornell's numerous diverse community and don't.
This, by the way, this is on the bottom of the second page.
Yes.
Question 9.
Describe how your organization currently reaches out to Cornell's numerous diverse community and going forward, how they plan to continue and expand these initiatives. These communities may include, but need not be limited to, and bullet point number one, Cornell's 7 undergraduate colleges and schools, next, majors, next, relevant organizations or groups that support your mission, class purpose, next, racial, ethnic, religious, sexual orientation, disabled population, next, faculty and staff, and finally, other undergraduate organizations or professors.
Could you repeat the last two prongs?
Sure. Faculty and staff, and other undergraduate organizations or professors.
Could you say just the opening like sentence once more, just so I have it down? Describe how your organization currently reaches out to Cornell's numerous diverse communities and
going forward, how they plan, and going forward, how your organization plans to continue and expand these initiatives.
Okay. Okay. So we're going to open up a speakers list on this amendment. First is Representative Block. Did you want to speak? I'll find that. Friendly.
Don't say that.
Great. Thank you for coming, guys. I think the question from the public is pretty good. I guess there's some of you guys to talk us through the process of deciding. So now I'm going to be able to fill out all those questions. What's the initial process for choosing what rules that actually
is? So we're actually in an amendment right now. So if you'd like to talk about the amendment, you can, or you could ask that on the general speakers list. Or people can motion to vote if someone is
ready.
What? Okay, there's been a motion to vote on the... I think it's significant enough that there should be a vote. So there's been a motion to vote. It's been seconded. So any... Yeah.
I think before we vote, I think
it was stricken. It is business of the day. It should be business of the day. Okay. So there's been a motion to vote. It's been seconded. If you're in favor, please raise your placards. If you're not in favor, abstentions. So by a vote of 22-0-0, that passes. So now we're going to open up the general speakers list, and I'll put you on the bottom. Rep Muir.
Hey guys,
you can clarify. Great. Next is Rep Block.
Yeah, and pretty much what I've been asked before, but really talk a little bit about the process for deciding what specific questions would each group know from the top tier, what the problem for that just needs to look like.
Okay. So I guess not so much has changed from last week, where we had fully fleshed out the actual position of the organization. I think part of it was the way to get this past. But basically, I think there's a timeline, if this is bad, I'd like to reach out to organizations in the next week. I think the suggestion last week to have a sample form, sample answers, really good ones, but then they are more good with all that. And then in terms of how we're going to review these organizations, I think it will happen at the beginning of the next semester, so the first week of school. Next year, we want to get groups all the way to the end of the semester to submit their information. And then I think we need to work, and I like to work with the members of the SA to figure out how we're going to evaluate these organizations, what we want to do, a good answer, what we want to do on that needs work.
Next is Rep. Iwoka.
So thank you for speaking with us about that. I have a quick question and then a comment. When you say performance here, does that mean only the highest level group is going to move up from there or retain that status you have to fill out this evaluation?
To achieve that.
So, and your name.
And your name.
Okay. Right. Okay. And then my other thing is, I saw that your SASB email last month, and I was wondering, in that application process, have you begun to implement something along the lines of the design when you're looking at people's experiences and what they're going to bring to the session? Is that something that you've included in the new application? Because I think it should be something that should be included, considering that we're going to use those people's judgment for these new organizations to have a value of their own, like, facilities to be, eloquent.
So I guess so you're saying are we going to be asking people about their kind of
the multicultural competence, would these people be able to evaluate the answers number 9?
Okay. Yeah, so I mean I guess that's a kind of really good question. I guess, I think to answer that question broadly, I think we may not have last semester, or maybe not this semester, but we continue to take efforts down the road to get applications for as many different parts of the campus as possible. And I think, so I think that's kind of something we focus on at this point, is like getting information that represents Cornell, broad Cornell as possible. In terms of like how we're going to be evaluating campus specific ability to judge organizations' ability to practice to include some more campus, I'm going to be honest, I don't think we should ask much about per se. I think it's a really good point. But I think, our thus far has been focused on making sure the SAC itself represents campus as a whole. And I think we need to look at the report.
Next is Rep. Bonatti.
Yeah, so Mr. Vice President Stalin, the following from the division of Worker. I just want to say that what's important is not just the diverse education from the campus, but also recognizing who is good and respectful, not having all the teams or not having the multicultural system. And the second main point was in relation to the changes made to the SAC itself. So now we are assessing, for example, class 9, Will there be any changes to training of the commissioners? From my understanding, we got about 2,000 commissioners that make the decisions on the funding, and then there's about a couple of commissioners at the time that make the decisions. So, what kind of changes are you going to implement to make sure that everybody is objective in subjectivity, so that everyone knows how to decide what organization has made its contribution, because the current building is subjectivity criteria. How are you going to train the commission into making the right decision and recognizing who is doing the communication?
So that was actually took up the full time, but I'll give you guys. But I'll give you, as always, but I'll give you guys some time to respond. And also, if anyone in the audience would like to speak, feel free to raise your hand and we could add you to the speakers list. I know a bunch of new incoming SA members are here, so feel free to also voice your opinion because you're going to be up here next year. So you guys have a minute to respond.
I think no one or two people is going to be making decisions with these. I think that especially at the beginning of this process, there aren't that many organizations that are available. So I do think it's important to people that the broader commission as a whole takes part in decision making. I also last week the idea of training, sensibility training, diversity training was brought up. I thought it was a great idea. I think that's something that we definitely can incorporate.
Rep. VP Breed.
Hey guys, I'm wanting to thank you for this I'm glad that you mentioned the sample document. Expressing whether you guys committed to that and showing your feedback, that'd be awesome. I would love to hear some more commentary on this process that you guys had in terms of communicating these new changes to the groups. And then also, I also want to propose an amendment in, on the first page, coming down to number 9, it says performance reporting. Organizations seeking to remain in or advance to the performance tiers. This is only one, it's not multiple. I think it should be kind of misleading since there's only one performance tier, say two performance tiers. Okay.
We're actually out of time. So, do fine. Just, no, it's fine.
Thank you. In addition to that, I just want to point out that this will also be available to other organizations that aren't currently at top tier. Because the idea is that moving forward with their operations next semester or in the future, they can consider these sorts of factors as they move forward with their operations. So, if this is something that they require to be able to perform this year, maybe they can consider you for not at top tier currently.
Brett Marshall.
Is that, would this be available or is it available for the campus?
So, I mean,
By a vote of 22-0-0, Resolution 43 passes. We are moving on to Resolution 44, Building Better Committees, sponsored by Representative Balak, Ballack, Marshall, DP-7. I always forget. I'm sorry. I'm tired. VP Lukashevich and Smith. Okay, you guys have 2 minutes to introduce it. Questions only. You guys know the drill.
Of course,
the student government that we had with Hawaii. And we got a lot of feedback from our community about being overburdened with work. We talked about our commitment to the goal being pretty low, and how going forward we want to make sure that we are limiting overlap with our community and delegating a lot more responsibility to our community members so that we can empower the community to come up with different issues. So what we see before you is a rough draft of what we potentially come up with. And so I'll hit, I guess, like the key changes. So you will notice that there is no longer an environmental committee, a women's issues committee, IT, or transgender, and also child. These have all been assumed under different committee roles that we've talked about over the last. So for instance, legislative community life has changed too. The community life committee, it will now take on, it has the ability to go out with this quickly right now to take on issues that pertain to health, safety, environmental issues, it will come up. Dynamic committee also will come up with the same environmental issues depending on where that committee is touched. Moving down the line, we see that our operational committee has changed in terms of communication. Now assumes a lot of conference and proximity functions of the CIC. The rationale behind that is we wanted to incorporate outreach with people in the PR side of actually getting a message out, and then the development of IT, actually developing initiatives or
technological innovation
and other things like that.
I'm
going to
let you keep going.
Well, thank you. So that's basically it for the most part. If we need to remain the same, they have to remain the same. I leave it to complete membership list. Go up to that, we can have a member of the membership committee and things like that. So essentially, we're not getting people so much on single issues, and so now we're getting people interested. This is maybe better. So the same thing, having different conversations with that person from various issues. So.
Good block.
Well, there's a new question going on.
Yep.
Great. So one question I had is, you mentioned people being overburdened, but you think that one person will be able to care for the community like you need to now can come up with environmental red blood health and safety. You know, there's a lot of communities. I know that's passed over under that, and that's a lot for one person to handle. Other question, and a couple other questions. It seems you're introducing a lot of restrictions and choosing being a member because maybe, so for example, in the financial review committee, 4 out of 5 have to be in the financial. I have to be in the
That's the same.
Okay. But basically, especially with the community life in terms of like having someone who, a few people from work in the work and just coming on the system and how to do this work,
Yeah, they're going to answer questions, but let me say, most of the language is not made for us. I can't remember what that is, but a lot of them, I wish the actual copies of the video were actually made in red, and that's actually very real.
In terms of having the chair for the election committee covering all the scenarios, I just want to point out that there are
no. For some reason I have Rep. Marshall on the speaker's list. Did you have a question? Okay. Rep. Iwaoka.
I am really excited by this. I think this is long overdue. My question to you guys is, while our government wants to have more FA representation involved in the structure of the organization, I just don't know how this is going to affect it. I would also like to see that this is going to be a community as well. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you're going to do that, especially launching the new school year, 2013, 2014, but how are you going to get the students on board with the community by starting the day? Because that's what the committee.
for the like free volunteers to get in and take that communication. I think that's the issue that will help them make that communication as it is. And for the other way that we're including after you utilize them as an efficient effort to create informal networks where I can go to the guy, I can speak and look at it. So, like, you guys are all working on the career course itself. Initiatives we want to get together and kind of flush out the whole thing more.
Something we know to do is the task force with the health and safety task force, which is actually being put together and the resolution comes from that task force, which is a way that hopefully we can form that, which might happen, but that we can also do the team of our community. We're going to do a big work on this because it's not just a task
force, which is a way.
Hi, thank you guys for your show that representative wrote this something that we did. Sorry if this is a specific question, but as it stands in the bylaws, the team that is receiving data after goals is going to be approved for the data to actually keep in the name that they have. And I think that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I was too. He did understand something that he didn't realize that he had been stabbed, and there actually was a lot of reading that he was the look learning and how. Once you have a third and actually accept all these places, it's hard to change that, and we should get changed in places, but everything's a go within the city at this point. You will be sure to repeat it as much as you need to do it.
Okay. And another question, in the bylaws, also, there's an exception for us if, like, there's a specific special task force one to create a specialty subcommittee, like, will that be included in the bylaws or somewhere else that I don't know about?
So anytime you want to take up a specific issue, and it has a set of issues, if there is something that is not covered by any of these committees, current infrastructure, you can establish an ad hoc committee. So the public service committee is an ad hoc committee that gets reviewed based on student initiatives. But the thing is, like, for example, environmental, technically, that's our ad hoc committee, but we see this trend where one year we have five environmental issues, and then we hear something we're going to talk about after the 3 years. So if there is some sort of issue that comes up in the issue of the then you can most of that opportunity, and if those issues persist, then the ability to review it or make it fair. Hopefully we'll work with what we have now. We'll hopefully have a vigilant EDC and an EDC of I to actually look at the particular resolutions like this needs to go through this committee, this needs to go through this committee, this needs to go to that report group.
VP Breeden.
I think I think this is a pretty cool resolution in terms of consolidating the committees. I think it can also just be pretty great for our membership across the different things that we have. You know, in particular, like I chair communications, and I think having one member who's got to be pretty cool. I just had a few questions, kind of about communications, but moreover, you know, can you kind of explain the delineation between a subcommittee and a task force? Because you think a task force is really doesn't exist now, but there's subcommittees that exist, and there's a vice chair that chairs task forces. So I'm just a little confused by that, because I don't want the delineation to be misconstrued going forward, especially by the new members. So,
thank you. So essentially, as it is right now, really, you don't have the authority without the subcommittee. Has the authority to create its own task force or special force to address specific issues. And that's a discussion for sure. I think the only thing that you can hear, what you can say about subcommittee is it will be more permanent, and then that needs to be expanded. You know, first, we don't want to lose the IT aspect at all, which is why the mission is a student-friendly communication that we also want to do with the subcommittee because it needs to have its own particular, vice chair of communication to actually oversee that resulting doesn't matter. We don't want to lose that aspect at all. So I think that's a good combination that those current things are happening within that committee and the three separate buildings.
So we're going to put this discussion on hold. There are a couple more people on the speakers list. President Gordon and Vice President Murphy have arrived, and they're going to come and speak with us and answer some questions. So after, we'll get the last three people on the speakers list to ask their questions. So. I don't know how interesting this will be for you. So. Thank you very much for coming, President Gordon and VP Murphy. We always appreciate it. It's my last meeting with the two of you here.
Thank you.
I know. Great. So should we just go right to questions? Do you want to? Okay. Okay. We will go right into questions, and the first is VP Gaines.
Thank you guys for coming in. First of all, a final reminder, if you're not coming to the event tonight, DC Murphy will be a special guest speaker, so definitely come check it out at 7 p.m. But my question is more, maybe it should be directed to Provost Fox, but I guess I want to just know about the progress of the public policy school.
It should be directed to Dr. Fox. I'm trying to think sort of stretching my head without actually doing it. I guess I can't give you a very helpful and intelligent insight right now. I know it's sort of coming up with faculty and administrators and very seriously evaluating the options. I think there's general agreement that there's so much interest among students and faculty and staff in this area, and that the need is so great. Globally, statewide, in the United States, internationally, and that Cornell has so much to contribute, it's a good idea to move in that direction. But I can't give you, unfortunately, I apologize, I'm not being able to cross this issue.
The only other thing I can add on is I know he's working very closely with me, because we planned to last time we were having a conversation, is whether the school or the college is a standalone program, is trying to work their way through this, because so much of the program is FIPA now is supporting us in human ecology, and also CAM program supporting us in human ecology, what can be done, you know, in the same way the College of Engineering has a school of Logical Engineering, has a school of Civil Engineering, that's not a way we can move forward and have a more coherent program. But so I think what we can do is follow up on the Provost and where he is in the conversation with him after.
It's okay, what I'll do is I'll see him tomorrow, and I'll ask him to write to the president. And there's a lot of presidents around here, but we're going to go ahead and give an update. So you might have to do it tomorrow, but I'll share it with
him. Great, great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next is Representative Taylor.
Fallon.
Fallon.
So, I think I'll be happy to hear that for a more sustainable investment, but I think you probably see that the letter that the private sector office over the past month that they really pushed for divestment from the fossil investments. So, is this the first step for divestment? And are there any other examples that have come out?
So, we have a few minutes to talk about this because this is not one for a quick answer. I'm still working on my communication. You'll get it tomorrow for me, as promised. I want to be open with you on this issue because I've had many forums where people have asked me about this in the last month. Number one, and I'm going to get to the direct answer to your question in a second. Number one, Cornell is very committed, has been for longer than I've been here, to sustainability. And interactions with Kyoto and other initiative groups have led us to spend tens of millions of dollars so far on everything from upgrades to buildings to make the university more energy efficient to a climate action plan, one of the early signatories on the president's sustainable, losing the exact title of the thing that I was referring to early on, it's about 700 schools as part of the President's Climate Commitment, I'm sorry, that's what it's called. And the second thing I want to comment on is that I've told many students and faculty who have asked me about this, is that I do think occasionally, under very careful circumstances, the best and most proportionate portfolio is a reasonable thing to do. I was the one who suggested that we divest from selecting investments in our report the first year that I was here. This is a very hard decision, and I think nationally it's going to be very unlikely that schools of our type are going to actually think of the best in fossil fuels industry. And So here's what I believe you can expect. Number one, I think you expect a very serious effort to move as much of the investment as is reasonable toward renewable and sustainable type investments. As much as is reasonable, I need to remind the FSA that over 10% of the operating funds of the university are on endowment earnings. So this is a very high-stakes decision. Now, the way the resolution was written, nobody's expecting it to happen overnight, and that's supposed to be your question. But I don't want to be disingenuous. I think in the immediate foreseeable future, which you didn't ask for, but in the immediate foreseeable future, we have no plans to invest from a large aspect of the investment as we are. What will happen later on is hard to know. The thing I do know is that we instructed the Chief Investment Officer to redouble his efforts to find suitable investments in the renewable fuels area. We've asked the Chief Investment Officer and the Chair of the Investment Committee to begin to meet with students interested in this area. The first meeting has already occurred. And just today, I asked the CIO, E.J. Edwards, to reach out again for another meeting and to begin to try to work in that direction. We do not have plans right now to invest in fossil fuels. And the reason for that is the risk that we would put the campus under because of real risk to the returns from the endowment. And also, in the interest of being open, I want to say that I have not been convinced by the information brought forward so far. I've not been convinced by the information suggesting that there is no risk. That's why I like it in one sentence. So what I'm saying is, evidence that people have sent me from letters and from links to articles that suggest that there's data suggesting that it doesn't really matter if you invest in fossil fuels, won't be thirsty endowment. I'm not convinced by those data. And so I'm going to reverse this all on this because there's too much at stake. It would be easy for me to talk about student financial aid because obviously that's something that you're very interested in. But many other things depend on endowment earnings, from hiring faculty to everything that happens in the university, because about 11% of our operating funds come from an endowment source. So this is going to be a long-term conversation between us. And in fact, I think for those of us interested in sustainability, and I definitely put myself in that camp, it's going to be a long-term discussion all across the country. I know that the student activists and others who are interested in total investment understand that it's going to be a long-term process. We don't expect to be an investment for large endowments. So that's where we're at right now. And a formal response to the Resolution 32 will come together. I'm glad to spend more time talking about this now if you want. I'm also glad to meet with a group if you get the schedule done and I'm committed to do it. If you want to talk about this after you get the letter tomorrow, you can see everything laid out. I'm going to finish working on tonight. For a couple more things, a couple more events on the BS tonight. So we're making a service to have if you want to just have a discussion of the subset of the study. And of course, I'm always glad to find time to meet with children or people who are interested in talking about this. I do urge the students to meet again with the CIO and the Chair of the Investment Committee for two reasons. One is for real, they're interested in sustainability. And secondly, remind me that the decisions on investment at the university are made by the trustee committee. And so if you want to be talking to people also in the United States, it's very important to be talking to those two individuals as well. Okay. Did I answer enough for what you were asking?
I know that you can't give up the examples, but I think what I was really trying to ask was that investing sustainably is the same thing as that. So, the university doesn't have anything to divest, only to invest in sustainable stuff.
Correct. Correct. And once again, what I said to you was that in the foreseeable future, in the immediate future, we have no plans to invest. This is not a policy decision the university can make, not an assumption that's dynamic at 11% of our operating funds. Something we have to keep on looking at. I would also predict, just to talk about this a bit more, it's okay, I'm going to start general interest. I would also predict that the more convincing the university and the university moving toward investing in sustainable, one piece of question about investing in fossil fuel industry is more complicated. The one thing to take into question, you're casting a very negative point of view on the industry. It's important to know that collectively, nobody has invested as much in research on sustainable as the fossil fuel industry. And so we have to think very carefully, not to change your people, but we all have to think carefully together if the goal is to make advances in switching the economic value. We have to be careful not to shortchange investments in that R&D if collectively the biggest investor in that are the fossil fuel industry. It's a very complicated calculus, and that's why I have a hard time deciding about this election.
No,
so, I know there's other questions, but I'm more than glad to be a dialogue about this.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rep. Torunis.
Hello. I'd like to ask about the recent increase in demand that we've seen at the many of you have done, the state that there could be no reason or no way possible that there is a decrease. And yeah, I just wanted to ask what the true impact would be on the state that can vary what it comes from now and how can it be accomplished.
So the increasing situation is always very difficult to see. And we've committed ourselves, I think I can say this, I've committed myself to making sure that we're increasing radically, substantially, financially at the university. The last 4 years, as you all know, the tuition's gone up about 4.5% a year, and the financial aid's gone up more than 20% a year. And so, this student body we belong to is now the ninth most economically diverse student body in the United States for schools of our type, the ninth most economically diverse. So I think it's demonstrable that the balance so far has made the place more economically diverse and has supported more students of more limited means. Something that I've been committed to because of my own academic background. Now the tougher question you're asking is what's going to happen as the future goes. About 18 months ago, the task force was convened by the provost and others that Dr. Murphy was on to review this very question that you're asking. And a slight change was made in the indebtedness of the Cornell students in a certain income bracket. The median indebtedness of people who graduate from four-year college in the United States is about $25,000. It's a lot of money. Depends on how you look at it, but it sure is a lot of money. The Cornell average that is lower than that. It's in the teens, like 18, 19 million. I'm sorry. And President Obama was the first president to talk about this. I skipped in the scoreboard. On the scorecard, college scorecard, we've gotten more affordable over the last 2 years because of this very dramatic increase in financial aid. So I am completely committed to continuing this level of financial aid. Linkage to the tuition increases in the level of financial aid. The suggestion from the task force, Dr. Murphy, and many others, was that this is the only adjustment that we should make, and that's the only adjustment that we did make, is changing indebtedness for the service from the record. The work expectations were brought more in line with our peer institutions. That's right. That's right. Not directly related to the monetary input. So it's only possible that something will change. We don't know if we're seeing like the recession happening. But this university's response to the recession in 2009 was actually a very dramatic increase in financial aid when the families needed it the most. And speaking of the endowments, it's important to remember that the 5-year Board of Trustees allowed us to take an extraordinary draw on the endowment to increase the financial aid, a very unusual use of the endowment because of the robustness of it, we were able to do that. And that's the original source of that increased expenditure. Since then, a lot of funds have been reallocated towards the financial aid as we tighten our belts across the university. So we spent a lot of time thinking about this and looking at trends as we year, and I'm completely committed to continuing this and to keeping close touch with student leadership about how the things are going. It's a very good question for us.
So one other thing I'd want to announce again, if there's anyone in the audience who's interested in asking a question, you don't have to raise it right now, but in the next answer, feel free to raise your hand and I'll call on you if you're interested in asking a question as well. VP Smith.
Hello there. So I think we all can agree that the university is never changing. And I know one of the things you were requesting of the assemblies is that we start working together a bit more. Particularly, I think a lot of us realize that a lot of the resolutions we pass will affect the workload of a lot of staff and from the EA and even policies of the faculty senate and the faculty staff. So I'm wondering, with this director to us, is there a lot of push from you and the provost to actually I don't know how to say it nicely, but make the faculty listen, in a sense. I think a lot of them have run into different situations, for instance, with policies that regarding just having too many exams and projects with certain kinds of how that policy never seems to really be enforced when people ask about it. Are going forward on inclusive book policies and things like that. So we're just wondering just how much of a directive are you giving to the faculty and others that really, I guess, pay attention to us.
Yeah, so this is such an important question that really goes to the heart of a lot of the things that we talk about as partners and governments here. The many people that I have at my disposal, rare exceptions, the many people that I have at my disposal is persuasion. So for an issue your colleague raised about investments, for example, Dolphin's decision on those investments made by another body, in both the case of the Dark Horse situation, the situation, my role was to make recommendations. Argument. In the case of the work that is absolutely needed, I think it's critical that the shared governance groups work together. And we do through the UA, obviously. And that's very, very important. And for certain specific functions of the university, you've actually delegated, for example, responsibility for the campus code of conduct in the UA and so on. But beyond that, most difficult questions like the ones that you're raising, I think really have to be done. Among the groups and between the groups. So what I did was talk to every single governance group and mentioned to them my desire that this happen, hoping that they would do it and trying to persuade them to do it. And in the case of the faculty, it was not the Senate so much as with the USC, which is like an executive committee, as you know, but because the Senate is so big, I was looking at whatever way you all were going through, the officers, or if you just appropriate the whole essay and somehow interact with that group. So I wasn't aware that there was an issue to have that discussion with the group that is SA to USC about things like the same schedule, things that happen over grade and so on. Have you had a discussion with
that? Not in person.
No, I mean the leadership in
the
city.
Have you had something
with their leadership?
Yeah.
No, not really. So, I'm glad, again, in anticipation of that happening, assuming you might do that, I'm glad to personally talk to James, sitting in the faculty, Joe Burns, and tell him to ask the question, and then there were two things you better. One is the general idea of talking to each other, sharing areas where no one group, can do something, either without affecting the other group, like you said, or without the support and partnership of the other group. And then let him know that you will contact me again if that's acceptable to the next decision. I think that would be really, really important to do. And I'll really force the message that you're going to do.
Thank you.
We have a community member.
Yes, please.
If you could just say it for the record and year.
Got to come up here.
And you can come up to the table also.
So you brought up the point earlier that the fossil fuel industry is one of the biggest investors in renewable energy. This is an argument for countless times, but basically, as students, we're not saying that we're going to choose which companies that that's from, but we would like for Cornell to be responsible to the leaders in which companies are basically trying to ability that they are kind of rich. And it's like my big concern is that a lot of companies do not have to ask to be quote unquote clean energy source, which is entirely false. And I just want to get some confirmation that Cornell is going to be progressive, and I hope if we look at your efforts again that we can confirm that we're moving forward to divesting from companies that aren't abiding by promises to transition to renewable energy. So my question to you basically is, will you maintain that obligation in order to ensure that he and the board trustees are in fact considering divesting from those companies that haven't had a record of transitioning to renewable energy?
So first of all, I want to publicly acknowledge the good dialogue that we've had in the sense that I've done this stuff and I appreciate it. But remember, in terms of the university's stance on medical gas, I gave a moratorium on fracking here. We've had for some years, actually long before it was a big cost for that, we already had a moratorium here. So we're on the same side of the argument. I can't promise you anything with the word disaster. Because, as I said, it's too complex and too much to say. I can promise you three things. I can promise you that we have instructed the both myself and the investment committee itself to push hard on the goal of investing in true renewable. Secondly, that we asked him, this is not that I was instructed to do, but asked him and the chair of the investment committee. I can't instruct him to keep him lost. But I did say that it's very important to me that we have meaningful discussions with the students, not just send them an order or a directive or something like that, but actually have meaningful dialogue. And the third thing is that I told them that I guarantee that you all will also listen and not just come to talk, but you will have dialogue and learn about the investment process. And the result that I heard from the first meeting was that I was going to make a but that's something that can be taken for, and that more discussion has to occur. I hope that you can do that as well. And so the very best thing that I can do is for you to, as I have this appreciation, and down the pattern, that we have that dialogue as a long-term priority for the university. And then the new things have to happen, but they have to be. We have to learn more about what things to say, we have to learn more about balancing things, about where research is going on, what kind of research it is. And we also have to see what kind of investments are available that will not drop the bottom line and pay out of the government. This is too much to say. The problem is asking about financial aid. Those are things that I have to balance. So that's why I keep on saying this long-term dialogue is what I have. And I think that will be a very important element to foster dialogue between the investment decision makers and you and many others. But we have to have a long time on this, and we have to keep talking to people and figure out how to do it. And when I say we, I mean all over the country. I'll be at the meeting of the presidents of all the major schools in about 10 days in Washington. And I'm going to bring this up and talk about what we're doing for now. And find out more about how these schools are doing. And I've got to come back and report to the review of others and give them all the citizens and sort of what I've learned. So if you want to remind me, but I said I would do it.
Thanks, Kelsey. Rep. Lovely.
Thank you very much for both of you for coming. My question is broad, but it's not important. Transparency and student input has been perceived to be a major concern for students on campus, and I think a lot of students feel that the administration's decision-making process is opaque at best. Do you think that students have input in the administration? And perhaps more importantly, do you think that students feel that they have input in the administration? And do you think there are any steps that could be taken to increase student involvement?
Thank you. That's really important. Good question. Yes, there's always improvements we can make. That's what we need. There's always improvements. But yeah, there's always improvements that we can make. Do students have sufficient input? I guess it depends on what the decision is. So we have Dr. Murphy, a very robust engineering group. Thank you, Dr. Murphy. We come to regularly the SA and GPSA, just as we do the VA and UFC. The extent to which we have transparency and meaningful dialogue is totally up to us, so to speak, to you and me. We made a decision 2 years ago based on input from the then president of the SA. Instead of only waiting until a resolution process like that for us to have dialogue about the major issues of the day, to begin to share with each other ahead of time what we're thinking about. And we're beginning to do that more and more as soon as we begin. To the extent that you guys can let me know about things that you're thinking about, to the extent that I can share, that Dr. Murphy can share, or the public can share with the student leaders who are around this table what we're thinking about, the more chances there are for us to talk to each other. Transparency in decision making is a very interesting thing to ask about a concept. And let me tell you my point of view about this. I'm not telling you the only way to look at it, but I'll tell you my point of view. There's two steps in that transparency. One is, does everybody have the basic data and information upon which the decision is based? So, you know, we're all looking for the same information, then at least we can start from the same place. And I think that there needs to be as much increase in transparency as we can possibly do. And I've always told you that you're more ambitious about how that should be done. And that's one area, and that is try to see how much of the basic data can be shared. I think that people who are in this administration, and I'm not talking about myself, but people like Dr. Murphy, Tom Cruise, Vice President Oppenheim, CFO of the Sacramento, have gone a long way to increase information out there for the community. And Vice President Cruise has put more and more work on our web. But if there are specific areas that the essay thinks that student leaders don't have access to data, I'm interested if this is going to be made. You are telling me. I'll do my level best to see what's being done about that. The second question, element of that is I see a human in the data is when the decisions are made, you know who's thinking and what the sources of input are for the decision. And so if there are examples where we are making major decisions that affect students and not having student input in those decisions, I hope you'll let me know about it so that I can try to describe the back. Remember that Cornell's early media school is having an elected undergraduate, fully voted through the board of trustees, and an elected graduate professional student assembly, fully voted through the board of trustees. Members of the board of trustees every month get a complete, huge spreadsheet of all the financial data in the university. As much transparency, I think it's a good statement with technical data as any dean or vice president for the university. And so I think, in my experience in other private universities, think transparency is available to the student member board is extraordinary central to Cornell. Where the decisions are actually made are wildly various depending on what the decisions are. And it would be helpful sometime in one of these essay sessions. Sometimes in the future, Dr. Murphy can describe some of these decision processes, or even invite me to remind you based on the bylaws or where different decisions are made. I'm more than glad to do that. But you can feel empowered to go right to the source. So, like our colleagues in the Institute of Investment Movement, we got them connected right from the investment community where the decisions are made. There's many other decisions that are, suppressing different parts of the movement we hire. So maybe we can break the conversation down as we go forward and think about transparency of data and transparency of work decisions or maybe more than people could be. Maybe that would be helpful.
Last question is also going to go to a community member, George. If you'd like to step up and introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, President. I'm George Miranda. I'm from 2014. And I was
say the following. Cornell is perhaps the most diverse university of color in the country. And I believe that as a result of that diversity, the client is more. So my question specifically is about the LGBT for cancer and the resources that are used in order to achieve their goals. What is the university position for Cornell about the need of the LGBT for cancer and especially the LGBT for cancer? Thank you very much for the discussion, and certainly we have lots of dialogue. The discussion that we have, the formal resolution and action for agency staff, it's one of the handful of resolutions that we did not accept as written in large of a financial perspective. There was an initial staffing in that resource center, not a position created, but a position created within a one-person office. It then would have student staff and an administrative staff. And we expanded the staffing for the LGBT community a number of years ago with an additional position, actually in another office in the Dean of Students office, through the Office of Student and Family, the Office of Student and Community Support. And when that person left, that was one of the positions that was not filled when we went through the dramatic budget cut. So this is just so that you're aware, because you may not have been here during that time, what Dean Hubbell did is when the economic downturn occurred was he was fortunate enough not to have to lay off staff to meet his budget obligations because he had vacancies that he just did not fill. We had other years, such as athletics, that laid off a number of staff, as we had to absorb the budget reduction that we faced. So it is the case that the LGBT Resource Center as a single office, you know, has access to all of them and an array of very talented and good students, some of them are volunteers, some of them are paid staff who are working. In the current budget environment, I am not seeing any additional funding coming our way. Certainly not this coming year. It's not clear that we're going to have the same funding we had last year because we're in a very new budget model that we're trying to work in an environment. So I think that as we look to support the LGBTQ community, and the case for that problem of the Asian American community, the African American community, increasingly we must find a way across the whole division, especially with the Office of Students, of how to leverage each other's talent. So, for example, I view Matt as an associate dean as the person who is the university expert in that area. I do not view Matt as the only person who can work, for example, with say, the LGBT student activities to support all of them in the classroom. It's disproportionate with the different students and the different student groups. How can he partner with the student activities office to figure out how to have their expertise in activities while he's a resource for other organizations who are realizing that you need to be inclusive in their programs and their lives. And it's a conversation that I've had as recently as this week with Dean Hubbell. And it's just something that I think we're going to have to figure out, because in the near term, I do not believe our division is going to see math as resources. There may be ways we can realign what we're doing, and those are always discussions for our business, and we're going to have a way to leverage positions or restructures or the combined, never get to one. I know that through the government, there's a decision that I've had some of the conversation that the lack of funding that takes a position is a demonstration of a lack of commitment to the community. That we need to do that ratio doesn't sound at all how I believe we are actually positioning for an amendment. I recognize the perception, but I'm going to work harder on how we pull ourselves together, recognizing we're not going to take a lot of resources. Certainly, it's going to be 14, and I don't yet know about it.
So, I thought you had to leave at 6, but if you still have time for a couple more questions, one or two more questions.
If Ross wants to get 7 o'clock event, I have to go home.
Okay.
And come back.
Okay. Rep here. And then the rest we'll have to figure out at another time. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's both of you. My question is the future of the Duke community. So, obviously, the Duke community has been changing from rushing to the diversification process to chapter 3. Quite frankly, a lot of students, a lot of peers feel as though the conditions of the community are being correct. So, as I turn to the chapter, I'd love to hear your opinion on the future of the state of the community here.
I'll give my opinion that it's very important for the university students to go versus the first one. I think it's the right future for the community here because some of the conditions that we all agree are not the conditions that we're proud of. We're working together to reduce this likelihood. And you all have done a fantastic job this year. You've had a much better outcome in general. I know, even in my own way, I know you agree with me that some of the things that have been actually going to happen. And so, because the student leadership research, the national and the alumni, has seriously leaned our senses and decided to change things, and the change is massive and enormous respect for what you all have gone through. And I know that it's dispiriting to see certain things change, but the recognition that there's something that you just have to do differently so that the basic thing itself can go forward, you all have been really making big progress. Not just the people who are you, the Democrats, but the people who have done such intuitive work in the area. So I think we have to keep our eye a little bit on the longer horizon here. Because there's enormous pressure around the country for the things that happen, not only at Cornell, but everywhere, but including Cornell. So ask, is the ultimate value of the new system worth these risks? And we have received it, and I believe it was worth it here, and have enough confidence in the students to want to use the leading solution on how to do it under pressure that certain things have to change. And so because the group leaders have embraced this, even though it's been difficult, even though it's been challenging, I think the results are very positive. The system is still robust. It still represents a very significant proportion of the undergraduate population, twice as much as the university I was president of before, and very, very optimistic about the future, while recognizing unbelievable pressure that you all have been under in the past few months.
I think you picked the absolute high point. This is a long history, a mostly proud history, and I believe all the work that we're undertaking is something that continues to have a long future as well. You and your peers, I'll say this generation too, is one of the most difficult times, because you're living through the transition. And that's a hard piece because you have folks that there are changes that are made, that's the law. While you're also trying to build the new, 4 years from now, students coming in will not have known some of the things that were the traditions that need to be eliminated or were the behaviors. Do we have all the pieces exactly aligned? No, that's part of the dialogue. We were having a discussion just yesterday at a meeting that had a lot of students and staff. They're talking about what is the first semester setback activity like and how do we accommodate the reality of pressure that people can bring? And what are their responsibilities being accountable in addition to the accountability of the new chapters not to have events that put what then the new chapters at risk? And clearly, we put the order right now in the new chapters, but shouldn't the individual students hold some of the responsibility as well? So there's a really robust conversation on this to get that out. I think we have to be really clear as students and student leaders and administration what are the things that we want to preserve and grow. And turn our rhetoric and our behavior in those directions. While we do have to focus on things that have to be eliminated, we're, I think, still too focused on what we're going to stop doing. And I'd love us to be able to turn and say, what are we doing going forward? I think that's what year two gives us the opportunity to do. So I recognize it's tough, and we've got some chapters that are under a very tight leash, some by the nationals, some by the university, some by the local online. We've got some that are pretty tough facility issues that are very real. So this is something, again, that is an single year, we're not going to be able to get it right. But we would not, it would be much simpler, quite frankly, to set it up in a family system. It would have been very noisy for a couple of years, but to walk away from it. That's not all we want to do. But rather, we want to have an exchange so it has the same 145 year trajectory.
Just one more thing. Because I really admire what groups here have done, the groups of the leaders and nationals, the rank and file of the houses, I also really think about writing lessons for general consumption about the students themselves and the chronicle of higher education or the letting me show them that there is a way to change this. Because a lot of observers, colleagues, and other schools are watching what's happening for now. Unfortunately, the death of these suffering is around the newspaper reading the front pages. So I think that you're doing such good things in collaborating, even though it's tough, I hope you let people know about this, that the overall national community can be more positive for what we're doing, because I have the respect for them. Is this the last time? I want to thank everybody again for the old leadership and old morass leadership and the new process leadership. I want to thank you for all the honesty and hope that even though we don't see each other in this setting, that the same questions we have issues as individuals have asked about, and you don't have a routine, and bringing those SHM1 external energy. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming today. We appreciate it. Your friend. So the next resolution, we're actually going to go on to resolution 45. There are only a couple more on the last speaker's list, and it's coming up next week anyway, for the last 15 minutes before we adjourn. Since I'm co-sponsoring this resolution, and as is, and John isn't here, VP Lukashevich is taking over chairing the meeting.
I've already spoken. there are a couple of post-science organizations that are presumably that includes Future Watchers, Eric presented earlier today, and we'll wrap up in a second. The sustainability publication, the famous Delta Sigma Pi, which is International Student Board of Technology. So I'm going to let them all present a little bit, and we'll open up the
question. I think the only thing I want to add is this legislation a little bit more of a context. Like, isn't it that we just think about writing to initiatives with sponsorship, thinking student organizations, through and cross lines, we really just like the right student body. Student body gives the chance to have a tangible way and enforceable way to make things happen across campus, as well as the real students to help us flush out the examples of the work we've gotten. And there's only so much of the great that we can do with that. And I think it's really a chance for everybody on the student public to get involved in the actual legislation.
I will be very honest about it. I think a lot of us, at first I was not sure what was going on. I think a lot of us are very, like, you are doing a lot. But in having a lot of these conversations and really flushing this out, I have become much more effective. And so I think if you actually look at what the plan is, what it calls for, it really causes to make students basically make a group taking effort. To really reach out past the zones that are the zones that are the people who are their own comfortable with the same thing like you said on this is the people with whom we agree on. So that means the SAP is the recruitment effort. The SAP is the greatest thing of how we can see this dollar is taking from the students. We just want people to start thinking about it. So we have the assembly of the doctor on the working position plan, creating these positions. We know it's possible, but to do what we want to do, unfortunately, since now that we know that it's possible, we want to extend it to the student organizations at large and see just how well it works. I think it's evident at this point that we can make progress and we need to start somewhere, and this is what they can start again in the draft. So,
the last question.
Okay. So first on the speaker's list is Vice President Jordan.
Hey guys. So like you said, when Gillen first was talking about the elementary on 400%, either. I think, you know, for a draft, this is pretty sexy, pretty awesome. And I'm glad you guys are on hand towards the Institute for Initiative, for practice. I'm glad you guys chose like the most consistent, like the most applicable. That's great. I kind of had a question about the campus partners. You know, in your rationale for picking this group, but more so how do you create buy-in? Because, you know, this group is nowhere near extended. I mean, there's just a lot of students that come from these organizations, but you know, what's your plan for growing this and creating buy-in going forward?
So part of that is, so these are as a very, very, very thing. These are just the ones that I was trying to see in the writing course for the grade in the curriculum and everything. I reached out to a couple of things for each for different reasons. Sustainability part, actually, I reached out to them after there's an op-ed about how the environmentalism community isn't like enough diverse and that they as a movement should be given to work to diversify. Delta Sigma Pi, I reached out to, because, you know, to be completely frank, a lot of people in certain communities feel like there's a stigma around that organization. And I'm not even that I also reached out to other business fraternities, but they didn't respond to my email. So I'm not sure if it's DSP is actually great about, and was really on board with it. I met with Enrico. We close actually reached out to Dr. Alexander because they believe that, and then I followed up with them because they believe that they make it very clear that they are a diverse organization and it's hurting them in a lot of ways. And they reached out to them because they needed the tools to learn how to diversify and learn how to be more inclusive.
What did you say?
there's a way to
actually follow through on that without having too much oversight and then you need to actually do a lot more. So I guess that's an answer that I would like to address.
Absolutely. That was actually part of the question that too. I think we have to have meetings today with some of our community workforce diversity. Actually coming from the strategy for review and measure. That's our problem, trying to figure out what criteria are we looking at for the group is actually doing and how can we follow through. So one of the suggestions that was brought up that she brought up for us to allow organizations to actually sit down and reflect. Have some reflection. What goals or where are we at? Essentially perform gathering. Like where are they at that then come up with some sort of we're going to come up with a survey because we need to do for our community anyway, but come up with a survey so that people can help actually identify their but whether it's demographic information. She mentioned micro
I'm sorry,
just so people know.
Okay.
So people understand whether or not they have their voice or whether they feel their voice is being heard or not. And then given that now that we have a baseline, we need to go forward and figure out what we have. Now it is going to be hard to say, okay, well, someone just sent one email, we don't know if that's what we're going to
say. Is there any motion just in the meeting at 6:30? There's two more people on your list, Simon, so probably cover that if anyone wants to second that. Okay. So the motion is submitted. Representative Corona.
Just the full
Sure. So that's what I'm saying, that at a certain point, culture change happens. Just like how Jesus watched the culture change happen to come from the students, and just stop getting students to go to the hospital and drinking too much alcohol. In the same way, this culture change has to come from students. To answer the other question, I don't know exactly how to answer it. You know, I would be surprised if there aren't students, you know, in all different diverse communities that wouldn't be interested in Portis Farm or other, you know, very specific industries.
I thought we would have a scout group that was very specific. It's different than
it's time. Is there a second? Sure. Okay. Is there a motion to extend? Okay, then Representative Pritchett.
Alright. So I have a few questions. My question is, is the FAR considering itself an organization to engage effort, or is it going to be about the bottom line? So if you go over to that, but at the end of the day, you still have the same competition in the organization, is that going to be, are you going to talk to that, or is it going to be standing? And my first question is kind of more physical. As far as the timeline, I think it's a good idea to get the idea of the way of the group organization, but how will you account for organizations in the group tiers, more standard than the same one? Is it going to be, once you have a certain tier, you have to adapt these changes, or is it going to be just, you go down the line? And are you concerned about groups operating under different
So to answer the FKSB one, that is more just a timeline. It doesn't have to do as much as that going in between the years. It's just saying X organizations will have to consider diversity inclusion plans first, and then the next group, and then the next group. I think if tier two goes down to tier six within 1 or 2 semesters, I still would hold that original tier two to continuing
to go out. So, to answer your first question, I think it's always possible to have conversations with it. I know people are preparing for this game, like talking about the business, so it is a business conversation to have. And in terms of punishing people for not being specific results, I think that's exactly why we had a first meeting about punishment, because we needed to figure that out. That's something that wasn't clear. So, again, we need to figure out what the survey is.
At 6:39, I didn't see it.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.